a few years back, I did a wedding for a couple. And we were talking about, they live in Atlanta and have family and roots in Wheeling. And so I was going back there to do the wedding. And so we had to do some of our conversation via email and over the phone. And came time to ask, what readings did you pick? And of course, I'm expecting some pretty standard ones. 1 Corinthians 13. But you know, it really is a little more. It is a little difficult when it comes to the gospel lesson. Like, what are you going to read at the at a wedding? Okay, you can do John 2. You can do the Jesus turning water into wine because it happens at a wedding. Okay. Other than that, then you start. You know, traditional ones have been things like Sermon on the Mount and all. Generally speaking, a lot of folks find that to be a little bit of a joy kill. So. Okay. She completely stunned me. Because I've never heard this one before. She picked this reading, John 17. She says, yeah, I heard that this was over Memorial, the wedding was on Memorial Day weekend, and she says, so during Easter, the end of Easter season, she goes, yeah, I heard this in church back a few weeks. One, I was glad that just meant she was in church. Two, I was like, wow, she paid attention in church, which is even better. So she said, I heard this, and I said, this is the reading for our wedding. It's become my favorite wedding reading. This gospel text, Jesus is in his last moments before he is arrested. And if you read it, now it gets a little torturous because the way he talks, it doesn't really sound the way we would speak it. And so he goes back and forth and I'm in you and you and me and they've given you them and you've given me that, you know, back and forth and back and forth. But in the midst of this, there is this sense of complete and utter intimacy between the Father and the Son. And, you know, we always make the jokes about, you know, married couples who finish each other's sentences and how, you know, like the wife will take the pickles off of the burger as they go through the drive-thru because they know her husband. She doesn't even ask it. She just does it. It's just, they just know each other, right? And in this prayer, in this last few moments before Jesus goes to the cross, goes in John's gospel to his glory, to be glorified, is for Jesus to go to the cross. We get this prayer. You know, and again, just to go back to the wedding side of things, for this, you know, we talk about several ends of marriage. There's a procreative end. We talk about a sacramental end. Even though we're Lutherans, we talk about sacramental end of marriage. But there's also this unitive end. We talk about in the midst of this relationship, as we learn to be connected to one another, that as we learn to be faithful to one another, in the midst of marriage, we learn to be faithful to God. We learn what that is. And here, this sense of intimacy between the Father and the Son is so deep and so intertwined that it's connected here, this great image. And even better, that Jesus is clear, we belong to him. You know, Jesus knows that he is about to leave their presence in a very particular way. And it is going to rock them to their absolute core. They're going to be scattered. He knows that the world is reacting against him. Now, keep in mind here, when he talks about the world hating him, it's not just all the stuff around us, but in particular, the ways that the world rebels against God. The world that every way it reacts against God is the world. Insofar as we rebel against God, we are part of the world. insofar as we are children of God who follow Christ's ways, who live in that word, we are not of the world. So Jesus is here, is praying, knowing that the world is going to be a constant burr under the saddle that continues to work against his believers, his own. It's going to creep in and work against the intimacy that he and his believers share. He prays that they may be one as he and the Father are one, that they may continue as they have lived with him in this time. For as he goes, even though he knows he will be resurrected, he ends up in the midst of this prayer pleading for them to be kept in the word. The word that becomes flesh and lives among us, the word that becomes truth. He asks God in the midst of knowing he's going to the cross to be kept in the midst of the people, even after his death, even after his resurrection. We had just celebrated Ascension on Thursday. Up in the Synod office, a number of pastors were there, and we heard the account of Jesus' ascension into heaven, which, of course, is not so much about Christ's absence as it is about his presence, his abiding presence with us still. Because to ascend to the right hand of the Father, as we confess in the creeds, doesn't mean that he's up there and we're down here and there's a gulf between us, right? To ascend to the right hand of the Father, is that to mean that where God is, he is. And we have a God who loves the world, who loves a world that rebels against him, insofar now as he continues to come to us, continues in his word, that presence of God for us, most clearly now connected to us in the sacraments, in baptism, and in the sacrament at the altar. That word becomes available and present for us in an incredibly rich and meaningful way. So that even as the world and the power of sin work upon us, seeking to continue to separate us from God, Christ's prayer is fulfilled in that we are kept in that word, in water, in bread, in wine, because the word is present for us. Not just present and near us, but present and for us, that we may grasp it and cling to it, knowing that God's forgiveness and grace flow from that richly. One of my favorite images in an old icon is Christ sitting in the middle of a chalice, and streams flowing out of that chalice and filling up the base around it. Just overflowing, Christ's life poured out for us, as he is about to do. In many ways, it mirrors Jesus' prayer here to the Father, to pray that we may be one as he and the Father are one, that we may be deeply connected and supported and sustained, is the last thing he can do before he actually puts his life on the cross. And makes that a reality. So Christ's prayer continues to come to us continues to be a source of his prayer, not just for those disciples who are immediately around him, but also later on here, just in the next few verses, Christ opens it up to those who believe in their word. They believe in their testimony of his word to them. Jesus prays not just for those around him, but for those that he does not see face to face immediately. He prays for us in this time and in this place, that we may continue to be nurtured and sustained in the word, so that we may be sent out into the world. Christ knows that the nature of our relationship and that intimate union is not that we wall ourselves off and only focus on him. But because we know that he has ascended to the right hand of the Father and he is everywhere, we are sent out and in the midst of that, knowing that there are ways that things will get twisted and deformed, that things will be worked against us. But his prayer and his promise are sure, that we may forever find him in water and the word, in bread and wine and the word, that he is not absent from us in a way that we might expect because we don't see him, but that he is present for us now in a new way for us to cling to in our faith, trusting in those great and merciful promises. Thanks be to God. Amen.